For Connecticut Public Radio, I'm John Henry Smith. With the economy thrown into turmoil by the coronavirus pandemic, I am pleased to have the only person to serve under two different presidents as director of the National Economic Council with us on the program. Mr. Gene Sperling, who is also a 1985 graduate of Yale Law, I might add. Sir, you've got a new book out, I understand, called Economic Dignity, and it's called An Unprecedented Look at How We Should Chart America's Economic Future. How do we chart that future now that the pandemic has changed everything?
When I talk about economic dignity, I talk about three pillars, really, which is, can each of us truly care for our family and be there for our family in life's most precious and important moments, too? Do each of us have the opportunity to pursue potential purpose and meaning in our work life? And do we have first and second chances to do so? And three, can we work with respect as opposed to domination and humiliation? And my view is that when you ask yourself those things, you chart a better course for economic policy. You don't allow the different types of economic pain to be invisible. And I think that the COVID has been a teaching moment, because it's forced a lot of us to say, to look at workers that we now rightly call essential workers, and realize, as Martin Luther King said in 1968 at the sanitation worker strike, when he said, you know, someday our nation will realize that the sanitation worker is as essential as the physician to our well-being. And once we start to realize the value and dignity of each person's work, we start asking, you know, can they do the things that we want for ourselves in terms of raising our family, working and retiring with dignity? And I think that's a huge question for our nation, is will this just shine a spotlight during the crisis, or will it actually be a teaching moment that will lead to a longer term new deal for workers and hopefully a compact for economic dignity?
U.S. consumer spending was up a record 18% in May. To what degree do you think that figure was propped up by the extra $600 per month folks were getting with their unemployment checks, and also propped up by the eviction moratorium landlords have been adhering to?
So both expanding those who get unemployment and the amount they're getting, you know, I mean, it's not getting rid of the suffering, but it is moderating, and it is allowing, you know, more Americans, at least so far, to be able to be somewhat made whole during this period where they have lost their jobs at no fault of their own.
You know, here in Connecticut, our governor, Ned Lamont, by all accounts, has done a great job of taking really decisive actions to curtail the spread of this virus. But last week, he said he was not in favor of extending that $600 per week CARES Act unemployment money, because he says it disincentivizes people to work. Now, Fed Chair Jerome Powell says he feels the jobless benefit is actually sort of key to getting us all through this. What do you say?
If Governor Lamont is just saying, let's try to design it a little differently so that we're not giving people more than 100% of their wages, well, that's something we can talk about. But if we went back to the normal unemployment paycheck, where gig workers are all excluded and where people are getting 50 cents on the dollar, I think it would have a massively negative impact.
How worried are you about a potential cliff we may be heading for July 1st as rents become due, evictions are once again allowed, and again, this $600 is going by the wayside unless there's further action from Congress?
You know, I'm so worried about it. We have to have the patience as a country and the determination of the country to say we're not going to waste money, we're not going to do more than we need, but we're not going to set an arbitrary timeline like July 1st or July 30th. The right answer is, as you know, whatever it takes to deal with the challenge. And right now, we could be looking at double-digit unemployment for a long time, and if we pull back on this help, I think the human costs will be very high, and I also think it will be counterproductive economically.
The other upheaval the world is going through is, of course, the calls for racial justice in the wake of the killing of George Floyd. How do you see the racial wealth gap and systematic racism blocking opportunities for people of color, and what needs to be done about that?
The average African-American family has one-tenth the wealth of the average family. It's not a historical accident. this is absolutely the result of systemic housing discrimination, redlining. To address that, you obviously need to just strengthen economic opportunity, minimum wage, those things that are economic opportunities, but also make it easier for more people to be homeowners and to more rigorously ensure that you're not only not allowing housing discrimination now, but you're doing what you can to upend the lingering effects of really what were generations of redlining and neighborhood segregation.
Switching gears a little, you served under two Democratic presidents, President Obama and President Clinton. There seems to be a perpetual war within the Democratic Party with, you, let's call it the Alexandria Ocasio-Cortez side, calling for sweeping changes to the way things are. And then, let's say, the Joe Biden side that wants change to be slower and a bit more incremental. If the Democrats get control of the White House and the Senate this election cycle, which side is more called for in this moment?
Well, you're going to think I'm advertising my book, but I really do believe that what unites the AOC and the Joe Biden is this notion that if you are doing your part, if you are working, you should be able to raise your family and work with a degree of dignity and protection. And I think that really does bring people together. I mean, Joe Biden is talking about a $15 minimum wage. They have differences in how to get to universal health care, but believe it should exist. He's talking about comprehensive paid and sick leave. So I think what really is where you get that unity, and I believe it is to hit that larger American value that I think will also appeal to many independent and even some Republican voters, because it's something even Republican President Teddy Roosevelt talked about 110 years ago, that even in a capitalist society, even where you are going to have people, some people making more money, having nicer houses, all of those things, that there is a core level of economic dignity everyone who works and does their part should do. And I think coming together on that package that would be about, I think, a higher minimum wage and health security and paid leave, I think that is something that there is support for. And I think this COVID moment where we've seen how poorly economically treated some of the people we rely on so much, from farm workers to meatpackers to people on the front lines of healthcare, is maybe going to make us realize that that is not either a radical or moderate or conservative movement. That is living to an American ideal that if you do your part, you can raise your family with economic dignity.
Final question. You were a contributor to a very popular TV show, The West Wing. Now, do we need more shows like that at a time when people in this country seem to need some supplemental civics education and an education in how government actually works? I mean, if I had a dollar for every time I was out when I was working in TV and I'd be interviewing people and they'd say, well, Donald Trump is going to come in and run things like a business. They say that, but they hadn't really thought about what that means. You know what I mean? So do they need an education in how government actually works through a show like The West Wing?
Well, listen, The West Wing has been very good to me because I got to be a consultant for 4 years and I got to have shared writing credit on 4 episodes. But more than anything, I met my wife, who's a TV writer for the show, on the very first day.
All right.
So it's been the West Wing TV show has been very good for my family life and happiness. But I also do think it really has inspired a lot of young people. I mean, I've heard people say that inspired them. And I think what's good about The West Wing is that it shows that there are people who are idealistic and they're trying to do the right thing. And yes, they have to take political considerations and strategy and sound bites into account. But seeing that sense of a group of people who believe in something bigger than themselves, trying to work through those obstacles to get something done, I mean, that is the day-by-day joy of public service. That's why I'm glad I chose this for my life. And I do think it is a good thing for people not to get lost in the cynicism and realize that there are lots of good people, lots on both sides, on all sides, who are really there in policy in some way, whether it's at the state government of Connecticut or in Washington, D.C., who are working every day with the goal of trying to have a meaningful impact on the lives of others. And I think the fact that highlights that is important, and I think it's rightly inspiring.
We end on that very hopeful note. Economist Gene Sperling, thank you so much for the time.
Oh, thank you so much for having me.